The 1996 Sunstone Symposium presents session number 267, What Do I Believe? Mormon Creeds from Various Perspectives. A panel including panelists Farrell Lyons, Albert Eugene Peck, Noel Wallace, and Dennis Nielsen. Please note that because this is a 60-minute session, the last 30 minutes on the second side of this tape will be blank.
I'd like to officially welcome you to session number 265. This is entitled The New Relief Society, What Mormon Women Could Be Doing. And it's a nice, ambitious title. And we have two excellent presenters, and we hope we have some other excellent presenters, too. We're kind of going to be doing a roundtable or group presentation. Rebecca Bartholomew is our kind of our premier presenter. She is an instructor at Salt Lake Community College, and she also does freelance technical writing. And she's the author of the book, which I'm sure most of you are aware of if you have not read it, Audacious Women, Early British Mormon Immigrants. And she's published a couple of other things. She is married and has two grown sons. And then our, what was originally titled our respondent, but this is kind of our co-presenter also, is Laura Lee Smith. And she also instructs at Salt Lake Community College, so we need to all mind our P's and Q's in this session. And she's also a course developer in training and development. I didn't get your all your educational credentials, but... Okay. Okay. School of Common Sense, I bet. Anyway, Laura has her MA in English from the University of Utah, and she has been a former assistant editor with the Ensign magazine. And I love her little bio, and she said she's the mother of a poodle terrier, Grindle, and I'm sure that's because of her love of English, and that's from Beowulf? Okay, very good. And then what we're going to do, let me kind of explain to you when I was talking with Becky, she likes to be called Becky, what she kind of has in mind for this session is that those of you who have given some thought to what you kind of envision for Relief Society and have some ideas, if you would be willing to share with us and just kind of raise your hand, we'll give you 3 to 4 minutes to say your little part. And hopefully we'll have a good interaction. And I think Becky was expecting there wouldn't be too many at this session. I just kind of assumed that a lot of people would be interested in it, and I'm glad that it looks like maybe I was more accurate in my assumption. Okay, let me turn it over right now to Becky.
I hope I don't need this. Do I need this?
Yeah, because they're recording it.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I don't think I want them recording. I could really be in trouble. I would like to take 7 minutes, and if somebody wants to time me at 7 minutes, you can turn me off. I'm going to start right out with one of the most serious social problems that I've noticed in Salt Lake and in Utah culture generally, and that is all the elderly ladies at 7 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. walking down the streets getting their Relief Society exercise, and they won't stay on the sidewalks. Has anybody noticed that? Is that only me? The most dramatic encounter I had with this was in Fountain Green, Utah, and I was driving to work down Center Street one morning, and there were 6 women stretching clear across the road, and I had to go on the opposite shoulder to get past them. There's no way they were going to budge. So I think that's a primary hazard to the health and safety of Mormons and Utahns at large, and if anybody wants to take on that cause, please start in my neighborhood. So now I'd like to get to some less serious matters, and I've actually done kind of a survey, and so if I anticipate you and some of the things that you want to say, please forgive me. I won't go into depth on it, however. If you want to turn to your scriptures, if you brought your scriptures with you, my text comes from the Doctrine and Covenants, chapter 58. Verses 26 through 28. Thank you, Beverly. And that is, it is not meet that I should command in all things. Women, I've paraphrased that, of course, should be anxiously engaged in a good cause and do many things of their own free will and bring to pass much righteousness, for the power is in them wherein they are agents unto themselves. My observation, and I'm sure yours, is that there are a lot of problems in Utah culture and Utah society that none of us are doing very much about. And that also, in general, change and response to human needs does not start with established institutions. So I kind of changed my thinking as I was preparing for this and decided that I don't really care what the Relief Society does. I don't think what I want to have done is going to start there anyway. And so I really would like to focus it as what could Mormon women be doing in an organized sort of way, enclaves of Mormon women. And I, surprisingly, when I was brainstorming on what I have encountered firsthand and indirectly as problems in Utah and in Mormon culture that affected me, the one that came to mind first was poor business ethics, which really surprised me. And yet when I think about it, that has been one of the major problems of my last 20 years, that there seems to be no correlation between being churched and being honorable in business dealings. And this has been seen traditionally in Utah society because Utah employers have traditionally exploited workers in many different ways, through exploitive wages, through unkept promises in salaries and promotions, through bias against women, through unsafe working conditions, in lots of conditions that we could all name. But I think it's expanded beyond that. We've enlarged on that, and now employers are cheating employers. And I just want to give one little example. It's certainly not a statistically representative sample, but it was just a story that I heard about 15 years ago that I've seen repeated many times. And it was a friend of mine who had a neighbor who owned a nursing home which went bankrupt. When she was able to finally sell the home, the nursing home, the neighbor did not pay off her creditors. Instead, she bought a new home for herself. She went on a long vacation, and she invested her money in another business. And my friend said to her, "How can you do that in good conscience?" And she said, "Oh, in business it's different." There was just a complete separation of business ethics from regular personal morality. And I have seen that more and more and experienced it in my own relationships. And often I have to say, am I doing this? I mean, if so many people are doing this, am I doing it myself? The next thing that came to mind was the deliberate ignorance of Utah children. And I hope I don't get too political here, but I've noticed that, and the statistics say that a high percentage of Utah young mothers work. And probably one of the reasons this is so is that Utah wages are lower, and so it isn't possible to maintain a family on one person's salary. And so instead of fewer Mormon young mothers working, there are more than in some states and some cultures. And yet, it has been my personal experience, and I think it's decreasing, but I think it still exists, that young mothers do not get any help in obtaining quality child care from their wards, and in fact often encounter criticism, and so that some of them, and perhaps many, are becoming alienated from participation in their wards. So that would be a second problem. I might have to skip over, which would be wonderful if we could just skip over some social problems. But another one that I've noticed is unequal wages for women as compared to men, but also unequal wages for Utah men as compared to men nationally. That it means that if Utah women are earning 61% of men's wages, Utah men's wages, and Utah men are only earning a percentage, that means Utah women are working for half salaries. And that is a serious problem in Utah. And I think Utahns are amazingly quiet and amazingly positive that we don't rise up in rebellion against some of these things. Another one is a severe problem with gang violence, and I'm no expert on that, except to know that the statistics show that these are mostly Mormon kids. In Utah, it's Mormon kids who are doing it. A high percentage of teenage pregnancy, and I believe that the Relief Society has traditionally done a lot to help unwed mothers, but not very much to prevent teenage pregnancies, at least in a direct sort of way. Another problem that I've noticed and experienced is that Mormon divorcees and single Mormon mothers and heads of families have a very hard time in this culture and in Utah at large. In some ways, I think a harder time than in some other states and some other cultures because there is a stigma against them and it's hard to create a support system. Another problem I notice as an ex-teacher in the public schools is forget what the standardized tests say. When children move into Utah from out of state, typically they are a grade ahead in their level of performance than Utah students. And it's worse in West Side schools than it is in East Side schools. And as a teacher in a West Side junior high school, I notice routine discrepancies between the way our school was operated and the monies that were spent for our school as opposed to the East Side schools. Even though the community that I taught in at the time was a West Side community and had a higher per capita income than any other community in the state at that time. So the bias was in the school district, and the problem existed because the parents were complacent. Another problem I've noticed is that the cost of nursing home care has reached several thousand dollars along the Wasatch Front, and it's over $1,500 even in rural communities and rural nursing homes, whereas Utah's wages are not increasing proportionally. So those are just a few, and they may not even be the worst problems and the ones that need to be dealt with. So then I came up with a list of possible solutions, things that Mormon women or any women could be doing as a group or any of us could be doing as a group, and some of these don't even relate to the problems, and I'll skip some of them. My first one is pie in the sky, and I know that, and that is nonprofit daycare centers in every ward. My second one is a nonprofit nursing home in every neighborhood in the city that is managed by and owned by neighborhood women, not just young mothers and not just old mothers, but all neighborhood women. It's nonprofit, although the workers are paid. Another one is a nonprofit people's insurance fund parallel to credit unions. Another possibility is a workers' hotline. I think this one's even feasible, where complaints by employees could be registered similarly to the Better Business Bureau, so that people, when they go to hunt for jobs or want to deal with the company, can call and get a report on a particular company. I think it would be the first time that Utah companies have even been minimally accountable for their treatment of employees. Maybe that's not a fair thing to say. This is another pie in the sky, an organization of politically moderate Mormon women who work together first to compromise with each other on important social issues, especially those that impact women directly, and then try to disseminate information and lobby even for their proposals to the legislature and to government leaders. I think that the hard part would be the compromising. Another thing, this is my own bias as a teacher and as an itinerant technical writer, and that is a tutoring center for women and girls in math, science, and computers, because Utah's medical school, the U of U Medical School, still has an abysmal percentage of women students as opposed to every other medical school in the country. A private girls' high school, because we're finding out the girls and boys really do learn differently, and that maybe there needs to be some separation in some subjects and at some ages. A private women's college where the teachers are chosen not just for their degrees and their publications, but for their teaching skills and their work experience and their actual ability in their particular field. I just want the millennium is all. That's all I'm asking for. An independent annual symposium of Mormon women, by Mormon women, in which each year one particular controversial issue is dealt with in a dispassionate, informative way, with the goal of actually coming up with short-term and long-term actions to work on that social problem. And I don't think that one's even unrealistic. A resource and support center for divorced women, displaced homemakers, a relief society temporary shelter for abused women and children with lay support groups in each, relief society work farms for troubled teenage girls. I could keep going on, but my pet project is this one. And that is a monthly women's magazine by Mormon women for all Utah women, regardless of ethnic background and religion, in which a lot of the problems and divisions that we find in Utah culture are dealt with. And my husband and I have started working on this. It's probably the least feasible of all of them because I don't think monthly magazines make any money. But we have mortgaged our house in central Utah, and we're starting a women's publishing company, and we believe that if we sell 15,000 copies nationally of our first book, that we can fund the first two issues of a monthly women's magazine for all Utah women. So that's my...
I'm going to take a little bit of a different direction than Rebecca did. Becky, I'm sorry. I keep looking at her name in print as I'm reading her book, Audacious Women, which is very fine, I might add. I'm not completely finished with it. I'll get to talking a little bit about the magazine a little bit later. Not the Ensign where I used to work, but the monthly publication, because that's also something I would have an interest in. So you have a person who will donate her time as a copy editor. So anyway, I want to talk a little bit about the inner part of Relief Side. She's talked about some of the... outward types of things that Mormon women could be involved in. And I think the thing that I've had the most frustration with, this is kind of a little bit, it will be an interesting presentation because I've got what I want to read here that I'm only going to read excerpts of and also be a little bit extemporaneous here. So I'll just talk a little bit. I worked for the Ensign for 7 years and then went elsewhere, partly because there weren't a whole lot of opportunities at the church I was building for women, and I felt like if I stayed at the Ensign, as much as I liked magazine editing, I would end up doing the same thing I was doing 20 years from then. One of the things that I've done is I've taught at Salt Lake Community College that I've been interested in. My students write an analysis of culture every quarter, and always Mormonism comes up, it seems, whether or not they are Mormon, which makes sense in the culture that we live in. What has been frustrating for me, well, not frustrating for me, frustrating for them, interesting for me, is that often, over and over and over, the same themes come up of how many people have felt, as they were growing up, they were children of divorced parents, or they were people who somehow didn't quite fit into Mormon culture. You know, you all know what I'm talking about, I'm sure. And it's come up over and over and over, and I'm feeling the same things from my students that I feel have felt in my own life. So I want to talk a little bit about that today. And the other thing is something that I just, well, maybe three things. The other thing is something that I've come across in recently in the workplace. I've worked for 14 years, graduated from BYU and did not get my tuition refunded, you know, that kind of thing. Was still single. Got a master's degree at the U while I worked full-time, so it's been a busy life and an interesting one. But what has been interesting, and that I've only just barely begun to notice, and partially as a combination of my students and the people that I work with, is that it's sort of this passivity among Mormon women. Now, I know probably women that are at Sunstone are not as much, are probably not as passive as some other women, but it's almost like an institutional rhetoric kind of thing, the best example I can think of is how the Relief Society, think in your ward how the Relief Society teacher thinks when she gives up to give her lesson, how she speaks and how she presents the lesson. That's sort of how what I see projected in the workplace among many Mormon women and also among many of my Mormon women students. What's scary for me about that is that I see women getting taken advantage of because they're not more assertive than they could be. And I don't know if Relief Society is the place to teach this. I don't know if people who don't have it can teach it. But it's the kind of thing that, and I'm not saying not every woman has it, but I'll talk a little bit about that in my paper, because I've shocked a few people with being a little more assertive and being a little more honest than people are in Relief Society. And the other thing that I want, well, this is a subject for perhaps next year's Sunstone, to talk about the rhetoric of Relief Society and what is acceptable or not acceptable to do there and what happens when you break the rules, which I will also talk a little bit about in my paper. So I'll skip around a little bit here. I also wanted to add, which Beverly did not add, I'm the daughter and the granddaughter of two Relief Society presidents. I have not been a Relief Society president myself. They discover you can play the piano and you're the organist forever. 12 years. We're going on 12 years of my work. So, okay. I have been in Relief Society presidencies, but not the president. Okay. I share a number of Rebecca's frustrations about Relief Society, and I too have felt marginalized in the church. As a 30-something single woman, I have sat through numerous lessons and talks that have nothing to do with my present circumstances. My responses have ranged from quick exits to avoid bursting into tears to mild annoyance. These days, I generally pull out my planner and work on my weekly to-do list, or surreptitiously read the novel I habitually carry along with my scriptures for such occasions. Though it has been some time since I've left in tears, I avoid church on Mother's Day, though that has as much to do with the fact that my mother died 4 years ago after a painful struggle with cancer than the fact that I'm not a mother myself, other than to Grendel. I still struggle with a lot of issues in the church. Most notably, I often doubt God's existence and his love for me. And even when I haven't felt alienated or hurt because of my marital status, I have often, maybe always, felt that I didn't fit into what Relief Society seemed to prescribe what a Mormon woman should be. And I have "should" in quotes. I have also felt disenfranchised and unempowered in Relief Society. This is especially frustrating because after 14 years in the workforce, and I will skip over this because I've already talked about it, people being more passive that sort of hinders their progress in their career, where they get taken advantage of because they're so nice. They have that Relief Society nice face, and they get taken advantage of in the workplace. Unlike Rebecca, I'm still church-going, as Albert put it when he called to ask if I would like to respond to her paper, which is turning out to be a group discussion. What keeps me in the church, despite my doubts and my level of discomfort, is the sense of community I share with the members of my ward and stake, particularly the sisters in Relief Society. Admittedly, I've found a more comfortable niche in the church than many people in my circumstances, many women in my circumstances. I attend a singles ward, and our ward members' ages range from about 25 to 45. We have a few people past 45. Some have children, most do not. Our Relief Society lessons focus a lot on the challenges of a career, of living the gospel in various circumstances, of contributing to the community, and the world and of dealing with loneliness and health and financial problems. Very seldom do we have a lesson that talks about temple marriage or any of the things that normal relief society lessons usually do. I've received a great deal of support and strength from the sisters in my ward and stake in my own trials over the past few years. These have included 2 periods of unemployment, 2 periods of business and working 2 jobs, or working a demanding full-time job while attending graduate school, the painful breakup of 2 relationships I thought would lead to marriage, periods of my own clinical depression, and my mother's 5 surgeries, radiation, chemotherapy, and subsequent death to cancer. Most of that was since 1991, so and they've helped me survive. The sisters in my ward are very supportive of each other, of me and of each other. Members of our ward painted and fixed up one sister's house so she could rent it to provide her with an income while she served a mission. Both of her parents were dead, and she didn't have another means of support. We supported a sister in our ward through a losing battle with terminal cancer, and we provide care and meals on a daily basis for a sister with multiple sclerosis. We also provide rides and emotional support for mentally handicapped sisters in our ward, and a lot of these people don't have parents. You know, they're in their 40s, some of them in their 50s, and are basically pretty much alone in the world, except for their friends in Relief Society. It's comforting to receive compassionate service from someone else who has been there, done that. My ward may be the optimal situation for a woman like myself, and I lament many of the singles wards in the church have recently been disbanded. But all wards are not like mine, as we all know. And I have talked with many people who feel alienated from the main body of the church. One of them was a 49-year-old single friend of mine. She had been in a near-fatal car accident and basically had to learn to walk all over again. Her mother was in her 70s, and she would come by every day to provide meals for her daughter. And what was discouraging to my friend, who was serving as stake young women's president at the time, was to watch her neighbors on either side of her who had new babies get casseroles every night while she, you know, her 70-year-old mother struggled to bring food every day so that she could eat. Another woman I know who's in her late 40s and is divorced lives with her widowed mother. And these two had planned to attend their ward's Relief Society opening social together until a member of the Relief Society presidency in church announced that they wanted to keep the social really nice, so attendance was restricted to couples. And at that point, my friend, they did come by later and say, well, of course you and your mother invited it, but at that point she thought, do they want us there? Do they not want us there? Well, I'm not sure, you know. And they finally decided not to go. But still, you know, a year and a half later, this was a painful experience for her. Even my 84-year-old grandmother, who died last year, used to get frustrated and complain that Relief Society lessons weren't relevant to her life. She wasn't a feminist, and she didn't use terms like marginalized and disempowered, but she knew when she felt left out, which was often. For most of her married life, she was the wife of a non-member. My grandmother was Relief Society president in a small branch in Wyoming, and they were all cattle ranchers, and so they were on the block program way before anybody else in the church was. But my grandfather smoked, he drank occasionally, and he complained a lot that his wife spent too much time at the church, which, you know, we can all relate to. But I should also add that he made his children pay tithing, and he later joined the church at age 65. So I'm sure these stories of alienation in the church are mild examples. Too often, Relief Society causes discomfort and pain for those of us who don't fit the mold or the ideal, and it's a lower and lower percentage of people who do. Is the answer for us to exit en masse from Relief Society? For many, it is. Rebecca and others I know have decided that the pain of feeling marginalized isn't worth the anguish it causes in their lives. They are happier and mentally healthier if they stay away. Many leave the church altogether. So what can we do? And I applaud Rebecca's list of things we can do. And at the same time, I would acknowledge that a lot of them, and I don't want to throw, you know, I don't want to put a damper on what she says, but I'm thinking that a lot of them are pie in the sky. A lot of them are not going to happen, although there are some that if we organized we could do. And I said if anyone's interested in starting the magazine, they can see me afterwards. Those are the Rebecca's ideas that are plausible need to be proposed from within Relief Societies by those of us who go every week. From the many different types of community service our ward has been involved in, I've seen how women can make a great difference both in the LDS community and in the larger communities in which we live. But what's difficult is when you decide, okay, I'm going to be honest and I'm going to make that difference. And let me just give you a little example of what I'm talking about. One of the problems I think that we run into a lot in Relief Society is that whole image versus reality, the form over substance issue. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Larry Johnson satirizes it in the Fonda Alamode skit, if you haven't been to that. Hopefully you'll get to see it someday. It's very funny. Too often in Relief Society, we teach women to put on a mask of sweetness and subservience and it's a mask that doesn't always serve them well in other areas of life. Most of us have rebelled against the image, or we wouldn't be here today at Sunstone. But let me give you my version of the story, and this also has to do with what I said before, the rhetoric of how women communicate in Relief Society, which I'll do a paper on someday. It's the words they use, the way they dress and decorate their tables, the tone of voice they use, how often they smile, especially from the pulpit at General Conference, and how when one deviates from the accepted style or topics usually discussed, how others react. Now, here's my experience with violating that. I don't have to worry too much about speaking my mind to my bishop. He used to be chairman of the State Democratic Party, and he regularly attends and reads Sunstone. But I do have to worry about shocking the Relief Society sisters, and it doesn't take very much to do it. Case in point. One Sunday, the spiritual living teacher in my ward was trying to rustle up a list of temptations to write on the board. Why, I wondered, so we could look at them throughout the lesson and maybe try some new ones we hadn't thought of during the coming week. I kept silent. She prodded us on and finally got a list of three: R-rated movies, questionable literature, and questionable music. She kept asking for more examples, and all the women just sat there. Come on, people, I thought. These are the most dangerous temptations you can think of. Finally, she asked, are any of you tempted to marry outside the temple? Having gone out with a fabulous non-member the night before, and being in the throes of thinking that if the relationship went on, he probably would not hold out for sex until marriage, I volunteered that, of course, whether or not to marry in the temple was a temptation. So was premarital sex, I added. I also stated that in one's 30s, the prospect of living alone all one's life and never having a sexual relationship was not an inviting one. And I often wondered whether to just throw caution to the wind, leave the church, and live a more normal life, at least by Gentile standards. And I add since that I have not done so. Okay. I also raise the issue that I struggle with to this day. Is living the gospel really worth it if you can't see blessings from living all of those commandments? The teacher added premarital sex to the list on the board, and the lesson went on. A couple of weeks later, I heard from a friend of a friend, this was a man, I might add, that some women in the Relief Society had been offended by what I'd said that day. I asked him why, and I think I made the statement that if they don't struggle with these issues of whether or not to have premarital sex, their hormones aren't functioning, you know? And he replied that they thought what I had said in Relief Society wasn't appropriate. What is appropriate, I asked. He wasn't sure, but he knew that what I had said, what I was honestly thinking, wasn't. My first response was to say, if they're offended by what I say, I just won't come to Relief Society anymore. Then I thought better of it and told him, if they're offended by what I say, I'm sorry, I need to be honest. They can stay away if they don't like that honesty. I've also said controversial things in Sunday school, where I brought up doubts about the existence of God, my identification with Laman and Lemuel, and my frustration with the wickedness never was was happiness argument, which doesn't seem to have much basis in fact. I still speak up in Relief Society, and I'm still trying to sort it all out. Ironically, other women in our ward have come to me and thanked me several times for my honesty and sharing my real feelings. If I've offended some people, I've also helped some. If I were to compile my wish list for Relief Society, it would be that we make it a safe place where women feel accepted regardless of their situation, and kind of a support group where people can really bring their real feelings and frustrations. And as I talked, well, let me just read this quote from Mary Stovall, because I was so struck by it when I first heard it, and I think this is what is missing in Relief Society. Becky's focusing more on the outward things, but I think it needs to come from this. I mean, our involvement in other things need to come from this. Each of us will experience over our lifetime physical pain, emotional anguish, heartache, grief, even betrayal in one form or another. If we attempt to deny the problem or to cover it up with a facade of forced sweetness and light, we imperil both ourselves and each other. Ourselves because we deny the healing that can result from the love, strength, and insights of true friends. And each other because people then assume we are our facades and feel more isolated with their problems. As I talked with friends about about this presentation and what I could, you know, whether some people were actually doing this, whether they were being real in Relief Society and sharing each other's problems, and hi, Anne, and being able to do this for each other, you know, be sort of a support group. I had a friend who really spoke out, and she, like me, as a single woman, she's gone through a very painful divorce, and she gave me permission to share all of this with you, but she said, oh, my Relief Society has saved my life. She said, if it were not for them, you know, I don't know what I would have done during all the things that I've been through. And let me just read what happened in her ward. It goes beyond this, but they had a lesson on abuse, and everyone just sat there, and finally she had her name is Valerie, she had what she calls an outburst, where she finally said, let me just read it because how I had it is how I wanted to say it. She said, After three different bishops had counseled her to keep trying to make her marriage work, she had finally found the courage to leave her abusive husband. She told of knowing she was doing the right thing, of praying about it, and of feeling the peace of doing what one knows is right. She said several women came to her afterward and shared their stories of how they or others had found the courage to deal with similar challenging situations. The lesson in the... and then a couple of other wards had a similar experiences, which I won't go over that. I watched my own mother do some of this. My father ran and continues to run the only liquor store in the small Utah town in which my parents, well, my father and my stepmother live now. And my mother worked beside my father, and the town was predominantly Mormon, but I often saw members of our ward, male and female, come in to buy liquor. My mother wasn't shocked, and she didn't treat people who came to church differently from those who didn't, whether they drank or not. And my mother used to go to visit a woman her husband was an alcoholic. She was actually a mother of a friend of mine, a high school friend of mine. And this woman attended church off and on, but she felt uncomfortable there. She had a word of wisdom problem of her own, smoked, and felt uncomfortable in church. But later on, she as a result of her friendship with my mother, she did go to the temple with my mother. It was during the time when my mother was having chemotherapy and things, and she got her own endowments. I don't tell this as the happy story ending that, oh, she got reactivated in the church. I tell this because the thing that was important to her was that she had a friend, who cared about her. It didn't matter if that friend was Mormon or wasn't Mormon. It was somebody who cared and was involved in her life, and my mother was. Let me just read what Valerie had to say here, and then I'll be done, because I don't want to take up all the time. I want to have time for discussion. But Valerie's now struggling to raise her two children and get on with her life after a painful divorce, and she says her release site sisters have brought her meals, cleaned her house, and tended her children when she was especially busy at work or was feeling depressed, and all of this was not assigned by the Relief Society president. They just came. The night I called her visiting teacher had come over just to see how she was doing, and she said, "I'm not too good, I need to get out of here." They'd been to a movie. And I know all this sounds like the end sign, you know, so I don't want to make it sound like it's, you know, like I'm giving you the Mormon journal here or something. But I think what's important is to be real, and this is what I wanted to read about that Valerie had written in her journal. She said, "Divorce, death, and other life changes may create feelings of loss, hopelessness, and depression. During this past year, I've attempted to release myself from an abusive relationship. With all the complexities of a divorce, my feelings have brought both fear and exhilaration. My new freedom is welcomed, but the problems of victimization persist. I have let go, but my ex-husband has not. I have no energy remaining to fight. I have made a goal to write my thoughts in prose poetry or sayings to release and cleanse my pain and empower my struggle. I'm motivated by a need for inner peace and want to influence those around me and myself for good. I cannot influence anyone by standing still and waiting for something to take place or come to me. I must go out and make life happen." And then she continues, "What makes the human spirit so resilient and great? I truly believe that the honest acceptance of one's own emotion brings true healing and wisdom." And I'll just put my editorial comment in here that that's what I'd like to see in Relief Society. But back to Valerie. "Perceptually, pain is something negative and to be avoided. However, I have discovered that accepting pain and the experience of hardship brings great peace and a profound understanding of the soul's own inner strength and power. I believe God blesses us with hardship and pain, not to hurt us, but to teach us self-mastery and emotion, and believe that without emotion, no sonnets would be sung, no poetry written, no musical compositions inspired." Then she includes a poem, which I won't read, but then she goes on, "Gardening is not one of my hobbies at present. I have a difficult time keeping my little cactus alive that sits on my desk at work, but last summer I spent many hours with my neighbor and friend Linda, who has the gift of gardening. Her tomatoes are so sweet and juicy. My daughter Kimberly and I consumed as many raw tomatoes straight from the vine as we could. Store-purchased tomatoes chucked in still green cannot compare to the authentic garden variety with dirt still stuck on them. Life is much like the beginnings and endings of a tomato. The stronger the manure, the sweeter the tomato." Now, I don't propose here to compare Relief Society to the tomato, okay? Although, I'm sure a lot of us can think of a time or two when we felt that what was being talked about there was so much manure, okay? But what I do want to do is to focus on that through opening up her emotions and being real and letting the people in her ward know what she needed and what was really going on with her. Valerie got that kind of support network that Relief Society can be if we want to make it that. So I don't know if this is the sort of thing that you're looking for, but that's what I wanted to talk about, and I guess we'll open it up to the rest of you to talk about what you're interested in. I feel like Phil Donahue. So, any of you want to talk?
Society sat around and like turned around. It would be
yeah.
more of a support group.
Here, you're starting to talk. So
I was just thinking how we're sitting in a circle, and if we sat that way in Relief Society, we would have a better support group. I just feel that we all kind of put on facades. Although I must say that when I go to Relief Society, and I've been just about everything in Relief Society, I do get a certain lift that I don't get in any other meeting. But my husband goes to the high priest, and he comes home and talks about the most exciting things. And I say, why don't we meet with them sometimes? Because we just go on those same lessons week after week after week. And I do get some measure of uplift from it, but I also get awfully tired.
Well, I have something I'd like to say. I think that those years that we had those literature lessons were so uplifting and so inspiring, and we learned such wonderful things from them. Here we were, back then I was raising little children and one thing and another, and it was so wonderful to go to Relief Society and see those sisters that I loved and spend some time with them and have a lesson that was inspiring and uplifting and wonderful, but all we ever have anymore, and I don't want to get struck here, but I think there are other things that we could be studying, don't you? I mean, I'm sorry, but that's how I feel.
How do you feel about Relief Society, Brother Arrington?
I think one of the problems we have is the writing of manuals. Unfortunately, the exciting manuals that we used to have 10, 20, and 30 years ago, we're not getting anymore. The manuals for high priests are certainly no better than those for the Relief Society, and they're not written by skilled people with imagination. They're written primarily by first-year graduates of BYU. They're under the direction of the Correlation Committee. And the Correlation Committee is not approving lessons that would be exciting and imaginative and different and eloquent and so on, like those that we used to have 20 and 30 years ago. My recommendation to go along with these others is that we improve the lesson manuals. If we have to have a certain kind of manual for the Philippines and for Nigeria, let's have alternate lesson manuals for people with backgrounds like ours.
I'm speaking as a non-Mormon. I've lived in Utah for 11 years, also not married. And so partly I came to sort of find out more about what Relief Society is like. Because I've never really been. I have a friend who is the leader of her ward Relief Society just this year, and she's totally busy all the time being sort of mother superior to the whole ward, you know. From which I gather that a lot of the social problems that happen within the ward get shuttled to the Relief Society president if she's willing to take that on, or even if she isn't. You talk about manuals, and it strikes me that if you want to have a meeting of women that is going to provide more sisterhood, really, more chances for the kinds of interactions that you're talking about, that having it be structured with a lesson from a manual that comes from somewhere else works against that. The reason I came to the session was because there's some things that I see in Utah that bother me, and I thought, well, gee, here's the Relief Society is a pre-existing organization of women. Maybe if they could get energized to do some things, who knows? The things that I would add to your list, the birth rate bothers me. And the relationship between the high birth rate and the not only the social problems, but the abuse of the land. You know, all these fires we've been having, that comes from, ultimately, from overusing the land, from also from having too many people And it's going to get worse and worse and worse in geometrical progression as long as the huge families continue to be the norm here. So that I'm kind of interested in what Utah women could do about changing the birth rate and our approach to the environment here. You know, maybe that's impossible. I don't know. But anyway, that would be my concern. So
I'd just like to say I appreciate what Laura Lee had to say about singles in Relief Society. I can definitely relate. Now that some of the singles wards are being disbanded, there will be more single women coming into the normal wards. I foresee a large problem with the lessons. One week I helped my mother prepare a lesson. It was on teaching your children about drug abuse. And then I attended my singles ward and had the same lesson. It was two completely different things. I'm seeing a problem with merging the two. And
unfortunately, my ward put me in a position where I can really do some damage within the Relief Society. They made me a homemaking leader, and one of the first things that we did was we had a lesson on being more assertive. And I borrowed liberally from a book on Christian assertiveness and used the example that Jesus was assertive in the way that he dealt with people. And so that made it okay for the women in our Relief Society to be more assertive. And in order to get them to participate, I passed around a sheet with a line at the top saying, "I wish I'd been more assertive when... ... And then they filled out information, told me about situations. Since it's a young single adult ward, most of them dealt with, you know, how do we communicate within dating relationships, tell people we don't want to go out with them, tell people we don't want to be sexually intimate with them, and things like that. And it really turned out quite well, and I had the women stand up in Relief Society in subsequent weeks and tell about their success stories and how they had been able to use some of the principles that would taught.
I just wanted to say I agree with that. We should sit like this in Relief Society. I teach in Relief Society. I'm, for better or worse, but I think that a lot of times when I come in, nobody sits in the middle, nobody sits on the front. They all sit on the sides, and people, they can't feel a part of it like that, and they can't participate. Or a lot of them, you know, they take the easy way out. If we sit like this, I think it encourages discussion, and people, if you're looking at people in the eye, you tend to make more of a connection. I think that would help people from all walks of life to fit in better together.
Is this sort of like you have to say something? I have laryngitis, so I sound weird, but I thought of something, and now I forgot after she talked. But our Relief Society, we do have a few outspoken people that makes it so it's more interesting. But they're very different kinds of outspoken people. Some are very conservative, some are very liberal. And so, she makes wonderful, real comments that just bring down the house every time she says anything. And I just wish we could all be like her, because she makes comments that I think nobody would think of saying in Relief Society, but when she says it, everybody just heaves a sigh of relief and laughs, you know, like, wow. And we really need people like that, instead of her feeling like she can't say those kind of things and never coming, that we would be really missing not having someone like her in there. I don't agree with everything she says, but she just, it's just so shocking. Everything she says is so non-Relief Society. It's wonderful. And even the real traditional Relief Society ladies, they're all laughing. I think everyone knows that there's this facade there. And when it's broken, it just feels so good and refreshing that everyone enjoys it. And I think in their heart of hearts, they all wish that they could say those kind of things.
We don't live in the same ward, but we have that experience in our ward as well. Very outspoken people, and they're accepted. We have an accepting ward, and that makes it easier to speak from reality. When you don't feel you'll be judged by what you say, but it's accepted. I'm here because for the third time in my life, I'm now a Relief Society president. And the first time, I was 23 in New Haven, Connecticut. And I'd never been to a Relief Society in my life. So I was an interesting Relief Society president. Had no traditions to go by. But now I'm with a group of from 18 to 78-year-old women, 163 of them. And I notice that when they come into Relief Society, it's the third hour. I hope this goes fast and we get out of here, and there's not an excitement that I sense from my husband's high priest, Gorham, then he comes home to tell me what they've discussed. So I was here to I tried the circle because I know that works, but the women in my ward were very threatened. They feel very exposed in a circle. So maybe that's something we have to work up to. I'm not sure. Anyway, my experience is that if we can be, as women in the church, as honest about ourselves as we hope to have others be, that's where it starts. It starts with ourselves. And most of the women I know long in many ways for the things that I want from Relief Society, but we're just unsure. And I think we're just in a period of changing from one way to another, and it may take us a few years, but I appreciate all your comments. Well, I would like to have it a supportive, safe place for women. And if you have support, then you can be who you are and thrive. Even if you're different, you'll still have strength from within because people accept you as you are.
I didn't hear all that comment, but I really think I had kind of the same thing in mind. I think it's, you know, if we can be the ones to go in and say, you know, I'm leaving an abusive relationship. Thank you. I'm leaving a hard relationship, or I'm having these troubles that nobody else talks about in Relief Society. And I'm teaching today, so let's all sit in a circle. And if we can take the first move, I agree. Most people say, wow, I'm really glad that she said that because, you know, nobody else is saying that. And I think, you know, once we become that, once we become supportive at a really deeper level and can show I'm willing to take the risk and hope that you'll accept me, and to show that I'll accept you when you have these really crazy problems, then we'll be there for the bigger problems, and we'll be able to say, you know, as a group, she's out of work this week. You know, how can we all help her with bigger problems than two meals?
I got one question. Maybe you could answer. Why in, what was it, in the late 1960s did the women in the church roll over and play dead when Harold B. Lee took away their franchise? You know, it's every time I think of that now, I feel like this Buchanan that ran for president, like getting out a firebrand and a pitchfork and marching around that church headquarters until the walls come down. But I don't think you could do that nowadays. Maybe you could then, but I don't think the women would quite take it that easy anymore. Maybe I'm wrong. But sorry for me showing my violent side, but I was just discussing this with my wife. My wife won't go to Relief Society. I read to her the ward bulletin and see all these things on how to make candy and chocolates and how to make homemade soap or something. She's not interested in that. She's a great reader. She's read hundreds of books. These thick books like that on Queen Elizabeth or something during the Renaissance period. And she's got a wealth of information in her head. And some of you expressed that you'd like to, like you, you'd love to hear more of that. And instead you get some of the silliness. I guess that's okay once in a while, but it's I read that to her, and it's just straight silliness, I guess, to her. But anyway, she is a very intelligent person, and it's wonderful being married to a feminist, so she can tell me what she's reading. And And she logs it in on her computer. She's got lists of, just on Vietnam alone, I know she's read 70 or 80 books during the Vietnamese War. But she can sit down there and talk to you about names and dates and all the things that happened during the history of Europe from 1000 down to 1700, what King Louis the 14th did, and what's that? No? Well, she's trained in that, but she never taught. She went. She made more money being a word processor. And but anyway, I just think all over the Relief Society women are missing out on her. She's not a person of a lot of energy, so she isn't going to go fight. She fought with Bill Evans a little bit in Church Affairs Committee, and she'd been writing letters to the First Presidency on feminist questions. And then back would come a letter that didn't answer the questions. And so she'd fire went off and say, "You didn't answer the question." And finally he called her one day. And I saw it all come to a head at that time. She'd read about Sonia Johnson and had gotten the idea, well, she wasn't alone anymore. And so Bill Evans called her, and she was prepared. Bill Evans said, well, the church wouldn't lie. And she said, oh, come on, they have too lied. They've lied about polygamy back in Joseph Smith's day and ever since. And he didn't argue with her. But I saw it came to a peak that day. I saw her just tense up like this, and then she found out he put his pants on one leg at a time, just like all the rest of the men. So she's no respecter of person.
Can I say, we have about 8 minutes left. Okay. So let's have this lady here. And then those of you who are really dying to say something,
I am the homemaking leader in my ward, much to the amusement of my children, because if I cook, it's the meal of the week, they call it. We have not had cooking. We've had one cooking demo in a year and a half. We have not done any crafts. We have had classes on Renaissance artists. We've had like 3 classes for homemaking, and we rotate so people can go to 2 of them. We repeat them again. We had classical music. The very all-time favorite was where people got together and discussed their favorite books. And we're starting to do more book discussion groups because we have 200 women in our ward. We meet in the chapel, a very daunting place to make a comment in. And people don't know each other. And they said their greatest need was to get to know each other and feel some support. And so we're trying to compensate a little bit in our homemaking meetings by having some small group discussions on books and things.
I just wanted to respond about women not working towards when they're being disenfranchised. I know that a lot of women are really weary and have kind of left and really worked hard and tried to build that awareness. And I think of our ward where I'm Relief Society president and I have to fight to even be allowed into the PEC meetings and meetings where decisions are made, and when you have to fight for the little things and you work hard as you can. I know the people, women that I know that are working very hard to have their voices heard. And I also think we have to concentrate a lot on the quality of instruction. We talk about the lessons. I remember a Eloise Bell demonstration where she said, I'm going to go over and play the piano, and she just goes down and bangs on it. She made the equivalent to how sometimes we call people to be instructors, and I think that that's a very important calling, and we take it really lightly. And I think if the quality of instruction as well as the manuals were looked at, then I think more people would feel a place there.
Absolutely. That's right.
Well, this will be quick. I missed the first part of all this, but one thing that our ward has done, and our Relief Society president happened to have been in the wife of the mission president in Russia, where things are not easy. And so time is valuable, energy is valuable, and all this. So she rearranged the whole Relief Society thing so that we're in groups of 2s, 3s, and 4s or whatever. And we do not go and teach each other, but we get together once a month. They can go to lunch, they can go to a museum, they can sit and talk, they can visit. Our group has gotten our families together once a month for dinner and for potluck dinner and that kind of thing. So it's looking at the needs of the women and getting someone who's innovative and willing to do it. The bishop's great about it. I mean, he you know, he can see that some good is accomplished by it. So I think if you kind of work with them so that they aren't threatened by their position, then it really can work. And she uses different people to teach. We don't just have one teacher doing it all the time. So a lot of women get an opportunity to do a lot of things. So it's a little nudging, a little pushing. Sometimes it works. It's a little harder at it.
Well, I wanted to go back to Laura-Lee's comment about the rhetoric in Relief Society, which, you know, we can all imitate and laugh at. But I wanted to point out to her that I'm not sure if it was the first time Elaine Jack spoke at BYU, but it was one of the early times that she spoke. And first of all, as she was being introduced, they were talking about her and her husband, and I'm distantly related to her, and so was, you know, aware of some of the things being told. But then they started saying, President Jack, blah, 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 blah. And I immediately thought, are they talking about Joe? And then realized, oh, no, they're talking about Elaine. And we're not used to that. We're used to it being Sister Jack. And it was President Jack the whole time. And then she got up and started to speak. And as she spoke, she is saying you and talking to this collection of BYU students. But she's talking about Relief Society issues, about doing visiting teaching, those kinds of things. And then 10 minutes into the talk, stops and says, now, you brethren here, are you being excluded from this? Why, no, of course not. And it was this wonderful reversal of what often happens to women, where we're the ones who are not being addressed, and then we're sort of, oh, by the way, you are included. And yes, of course, you know, yes, yes. And so I think that from the top there are being some changes, and that she was doing that completely awarely and completely deliberately in order to say, I want you to look at me and women and the Relief Society in a completely different light. So I'm excited about that. The other thing I want to mention is that I have been a Relief Society teacher in my ward for years, and when I was called, though, I stood up and said to the sisters, well, I was asked to substitute last month, and my response to the name of the lesson was, boy, I'd have to get a testimony of that really fast. And the sisters kind of gasped, but then laughed. And I don't want to say, so I changed everything in the Relief Society, because also our bishop's wife was the activities chairman, and she went to her husband and said, we need a women's retreat. And I don't care how much it costs, the women need to be together without their families, without their husbands. And so since then, at Timp Lodge, every year, there is a ward women's retreat. And and the women in the ward, in general, I think in Relief Society, are honest with each other. Somebody is up there saying, you know, you just ask God and you pray hard enough and it all works out. And the woman who everybody knows lost her baby last year, you know, within 48 hours of his birth, says, I don't believe that. And then the teacher says, oh, you're right. That's not true. Those kinds of things happen in our ward. And I have just been made the homemaking counselor in an existing presidency where the president and the homemaking leader are the kind who like to do the crafts and so on. So I have an interesting challenge there. And was pointed out this session, I was telling Becky, by my mother, who's 79 years old, and wanted me to come because she didn't feel like she had the time to, but she wants me to come and tell her all about what was said here.
Okay, we're just pretty much out of time, but I want to give, would you like to say a couple of seconds at the end?
Yes.
Okay. But I would like to thank all of you for coming, and I really appreciate how open people have been. And maybe if you haven't had everything solved, I think the important thing is that we talk to one another honestly. And let's let me give you a couple seconds. And then
I was just going to say it was a hard-fought thing to get President Jack called President Jack. I was at the Ann sign at the point where the church style guide was changed from sister. And Amy may have been there, too. I know that Ann's husband was there at the time. Giles was there at the time, and it was hard because a bunch of us female editors walked in and said, now wait just a minute, why do we call them sister, and we call all the, you know, we call all these other 70s president and things. So it was a hard-fought thing, but we were glad to have it. So some changes are being made, and I think, you know,
as people look at things more critically, it'll be interesting.
I just want to thank everybody. Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate you having
come down. Oh, yes.
Which one?
It's okay.
No.
Well, I was just going to share in our ward because, we've had these. I'm a teacher in our ward, and we've had these the round table things, and they've been much, much wonderful, wonderful lessons when we all sit around from each other. But in our ward, we have like 7 or 8 teachers called as teachers, and not particularly over one particular lesson. And we get together every 4 months, and we go over the lessons and decide what are the needs of our ward and do we teach them or not. And some people are uncomfortable teaching certain lessons, and so we choose at that time what lesson we want to teach. And then we are also given the freedom that we can take the subject, but we don't need to use the manual. And, my last lesson was on evil, and I used the People of the Life from Scott Peck, and I had such a wonderful response from that. But it is a wonderful way to get around this manual that he was talking about that seems to be serving as pablum.